For a couple of days, an uneasy pause seemed to hang over Buckskin. The strike at the Lucky Lizard continued, in addition to the one at the Alhambra. The new equipment for the stamp mill at the Crown Royal arrived, as well as a dozen hard-bitten, well-armed men who had been hired by Conrad Browning to keep any more sabotage from occurring at the mine. Their leader, a tall, rusty-bearded man named Burke, came to see Frank.
We have our orders. We're to protect the Crown Royal, and that's it. Mr. Browning doesn't want us getting mixed up in any other local troubles.
That's fine with me. I'd just as soon give things a chance to settle down on their own. We don't need a war here in Buckskin.
That looked like what the town might get, though, because a day later, the army rode in. Frank was in the office when Catamount Jack stuck his head in the door.
Hey, you'd better come take a gander at this, Marshal. Looks like Buckskin's being invaded.
Frank didn't know whether to be alarmed or puzzled by Jack's comment. He stood up and moved to the door, not wasting any time. Sure enough, a military force was entering the settlement, riding into town from the northern end. The natty blue uniforms made Frank take them for United States cavalrymen at first, but he realized a second later that the markings and insignia were different. These uniforms were a little gaudier, a little fancier than regular cavalry uniforms. All the riders, about two dozen of them, wore sabers in brass scabbards and had Winchesters in saddle boots instead of the usual army carbines. The soldiers rode with their eyes fixed straight ahead, not paying any attention to the commotion their arrival was causing in the settlement. They came on down the street to the marshal's office, where the officer leading them reined in and raised a hand. The man right behind him, evidently a sergeant of some sort, turned in his saddle.
Company, halt!
The officer dismounted, handed his horse's reins to the sergeant, and stepped up onto the boardwalk. He was a tall, stiff-backed man with iron-gray hair and a neat mustache and goatee. He tugged a gauntlet off his right hand and offered that hand to Frank.
Marshal Morgan, I'm Colonel Jefferson Stockwell, Nevada State Militia.
Colonel, what brings you to Buckskin?
The governor has ordered us here to maintain law and order in the face of mountain civil unrest.
What civil unrest? You can see for yourself that the place is plumb peaceful right now.
At the moment, perhaps. But the governor has been informed that violent strikes have broken out at two of the area's mines and may spread to other mines in the vicinity. Riots have been reported. Dealing with such problems is beyond the scope of local law enforcement. Therefore, the governor dispatched us to see to it that things don't get even more out of hand. The citizens must be protected.
And the mine owners have to be protected too, is that it? Since Jack and me and my other deputy are that local law enforcement you were talking about, don't you think we ought to have a say in whether or not we need help from a troop of militiamen?
The governor received a full report on the situation here, Marshal, and he acted in what he believes to be everyone's best interests.
Monroe, he's the one behind this, Jack.
Sure is shooting.
As far as Frank had known, Hamish Monroe had been holed up in the hotel for the past few days, consulting with Hammersmith and Nathan Evers about the strike going on at the Alhambra. Now Frank realized that Monroe had already taken action without him knowing about it. Monroe must have sent a rider into Virginia City to wire the governor in Carson City and ask for help putting down the strike. The governor, like all politicians, mindful of anyone with wealth and influence who might help him get elected again, had been only too glad to help. He had sent in the militia, ostensibly to keep order, but Frank knew how these things worked. He had seen similar situations in other places. Starkwell and his company of soldiers would actually be working for Monroe, and their real goal would be to crush the strike crippling production at the Alhambra. To accomplish that goal, they would crush the strikers if they had to.
Colonel, I'd appreciate it if you and your men would turn around and ride right back into Carson City. Tell the governor we appreciate his concern, but we don't need any help keeping a lid on things here.
I'm sorry, Marshal, but our orders are clear. We won't be leaving until the miners' strike is over, the men have returned to work, and the danger is ended.
But that ain't right. You can't force them fellas to work for Monroe, nor for Tip Woodford neither.
The governor disagrees, sir. He views continued silver production as vital to the state's interest. I'll be riding out to the Alhambra mine to issue a warning to the striking workers. I'm sure they'll be reasonable.
Damn it, if you go out there, those men are liable to think you've come to arrest them.
If they don't cooperate, they'll be right about that.
They're liable to open fire on you.
If they do, they'll wish they hadn't. Our orders empower us to use all necessary force to maintain order.
I'm going out there with you. Let me talk to those men first.
You've had plenty of chances to talk to them before now, Marshal. I can't stop you from riding out there, but I warn you, stay out of our way.
Jack, find Clint and tell him what's going on. The two of you stay here in town and be ready for trouble.
You be careful, Frank.
It may be too late for that.
Frank headed for the livery stable. As he hurried along the street, he glanced up at the hotel. Hamish Monroe stood in one of the windows of his suite, the curtain pulled back so that he could gaze out at the street. The mining magnate wore a self-satisfied smile, and the nod that he gave Frank was even more infuriating. Monroe thought that everything was going his way again. He believed that his money and influence could always get him whatever he wanted. And so far, Frank reflected with a grim, silent curse, nobody had proven that idea wrong. Starkwell mounted up, and the militia moved out, riding past Amos Hillman's place. Frank heard them go by as he was throwing his saddle on Goldie. The uniformed riders were still in sight as he emerged from the livery barn a couple of minutes later. They were following the main trail toward the Alhambra. Frank figured he could circle around and beat them to the mine, since he knew the area better than the militiamen did.
Oh, Frank! I can't find Clint.
He's bound to be around somewhere. Keep looking and warn the townspeople that there's liable to be more trouble.
All hell's about to bust loose, ain't it, Frank?
Not if I can help it.
A breeze brushed his face as Clint Farnham rode up the slope. It was a beautiful day, the sort of day he would have enjoyed getting out of the settlement and just riding around the hills, taking in the magnificent scenery. The years had taught him to appreciate such things. All the long, solitary, dangerous years of riding the Owl Hoot Trail, never knowing when a day might be his last one on this earth. He hadn't ridden out here into the hills west of the settlement to look at the scenery, though. He had a job to do, and he intended to carry it out. He might not like it much anymore, but there was no turning back now. The smell of tobacco smoke drifted to his nose. He grimaced. That was careless. Didn't really matter, though. Not now. Clint topped the hill and saw the riders waiting on the other side. Between 30 and 40, he estimated, roughly dressed and heavily armed, with a brutal eagerness stamped on their beard-stubbled faces. The big, blonde-bearded man spurred out to meet Clint.
I got the word you sent and brought the boys right on. What's going on down there?
Company of state militia rode in just as I was about to leave to meet you, Jory.
What are they doing there?
I don't know for sure, but I imagine they came to bust that strike out at the Alhambra mine. The gent who owns it, Hamish Monroe, is friends with the governor.
I guess that means we'll have to call the raid off, Jory. We can't attack the town if the militia's there.
The hell we can't. This is a stroke of good luck for us.
I don't follow you, Jory.
The soldier boys and them miners will be too busy fighting with each other to worry about us, and the people in town will be so caught up in that they won't expect trouble to come at them from any other direction.
I don't know.
What's the best time to jump somebody? When he's watching two other hombres fight. That's when you hit him with a sucker punch. That's what we're going to do to Buckskin. What about Morgan?
I was watching from one of the hills. Saw him ride out toward the Alhambra. My guess is that he was trying to get there before the militia did, so we could warn those miners.
So the only law left in town is one old pelican.
Yeah.
You've done a mighty fine job spying out this job for us, Clint. You've already earned your share of the loot. I reckon you can be right proud of yourself. Let's go, men.
As the gang moved out, bound for Buckskin, Clint Farnham thought about what Poole had just said to him. Proud of himself? Clint thought about how Frank had given him a chance to wear a deputy's star, about how Catamount Jack had befriended him, about how folks in the settlement had started smiling at him and looking at him with something like respect in their eyes. He thought, too, about how Frank had saved his life during that shootout with the drunken miner who'd had the fight with Professor Burton. Funny, he didn't feel proud of himself at all. He felt almost ashamed, in fact. It wasn't the first time in his life he'd been ashamed of something he was doing, not by a long shot. But he was too old to change now. Besides, money spent just as good, whether you were ashamed of how you got it or not. He spurred ahead to catch up to Jory Poole. Goldie responded magnificently as Frank left the trail and started cutting across country to try to get ahead of Colonel Starkwell and the militia company. The horse took to the steep slopes almost like a mountain goat, bounding from rock to rock going up, and then deftly keeping his hooves under him as he skidded down the far sides. Goldie leaped gullies and weaved through trees, and even though Frank felt a little guilty for thinking it, he didn't believe that Stormy could have done any better. Wolf raced alongside. The big cur seemed as happy to get out and stretch his legs, as eager for action as Goldie did. Frank came inside of the bench where the Alhambra was located, with its overhanging cliffs and the rock formations that looked like battlements. He didn't see the militia on the trail approaching the mine, and knew he had beaten them here. He couldn't be very far ahead of them, though, so he knew he didn't have much time. He galloped down the hill and brought Goldie to a halt in front of the bunkhouse.
Rogan! Rogan, it's Marshal Morgan from Buckskin! Trouble's on the way!
There was no response from the building. Frank dismounted and hurried to the door. When he looked inside, he saw that the bunkhouse was empty. Where could the striking miners be? He walked over to the office and stamp mill, keeping one eye on the trail as he did so. The other buildings were empty too, as if the mine had been abandoned. That wasn't the case, though, as proved by the warning shot that came from the mouth of the shaft a moment later as Frank walked back out into the open. The bullet whistled past, well above his head, but instinct made him crouch and reach for his peacemaker.
Hold it, Morgan!
Frank turned and saw Rogan standing at the tunnel mouth, along with several more of the striking miners. He realized that they must have barricaded themselves inside the shaft to keep Monroe from bringing in any other workers. Frank straightened and walked toward the mine. He kept his hands in plain sight so that Rogan and the others could see them. Rogan fired again. This time, the bullet kicked up dirt and rocks from the ground about 10 yards in front of Frank. Frank didn't break stride or slow down.
Get out of here, Marshal. Next one might not miss.
Listen to me, Rogan. Monroe's gotten the governor to send the state militia to break this strike. A company of armed soldiers is on its way out here right now.
Let them come! We'll show them we won't be budged!
You'll all get yourselves killed, that's what you'll do. You boys are tough, but those militiamen are professionals at this. They'll do whatever they have to in order to break this strike. They're liable to heave a bomb in there to blast you out.
That would damage the mine.
You think Monroe wouldn't be willing to have damage repaired if it meant that none of his workers would ever dare defy him again?
We got a right to strike.
Not about rights anymore. It's about Monroe wanting to crush you and teach a lesson to anybody else who ever works for him.
Yeah, well, what business is that of yours?
I don't want to see all of you massacred. Monroe thinks he's above the law. I don't like that.
Ho-ho, that's mighty funny coming from a gunfighter like you. I didn't reckon you ever worried all that much about the law.
Maybe I didn't in the past, but that's before I put this tin star on.
What do you think we ought to do?
Get out of here. Clear out and let Monroe have his mind back.
Well, that's giving up!
Go over to the Lucky Lizard and get the miners there who are on strike. All of you come to Buckskin. There's a tunnel from the mine that runs under Tip's office in town, so you can get there without the militia seeing you. We'll all sit down and have a meeting with Tip Woodford and Monroe. Tip's a reasonable man. His workers will be able to work out something with him.
Yeah, well, what about Monroe? He ain't reasonable.
No, but out in the open like that, where everybody in town can see what's going on, he'll have to make a show of listening anyway. And once he sees that Woodford is going to settle the strike at the Lucky Lizard, public opinion may force him to go along and reach a compromise, too.
Well, maybe. It might be worth a try.
You can decide what to do later. Right now, you got to get out of here while you still have the chance. That militia company will be showing up any minute now.
What do you say, boys?
I think we ought to do what the marshal says. If we join forces with Woodford's men, then Woodford and Monroe will have to listen to us.
What about the Crown Royal? Once it starts up again, will the men who work there be treated fairly too?
I can just about guarantee that. You see, I'm well acquainted with the fella who owns it.
All right, let's go.
I'll go back down the trail and stall the militia. Head for the Lucky Lizard and then come on into town this evening. I'll have Woodford and Monroe waiting for you.
Rogan jerked his head in a nod. Frank hurried back to Goldie, grabbed the reins he had left trailing on the ground and swung up into the saddle.
Come on, Wolf.
Frank heeled Goldie into a run. Following the main trail this time, Frank rode hard. He spotted a haze of dust in the air up ahead and knew the militia was only a few hundred yards away. Frank sighted them as he came around a bend where the trail looped around a cluster of large boulders.
Wolf, stay.
Frank reined in and sat there in the middle of the trail, blocking it as the riders approached. Of course, he was outnumbered by more than 20-1, and if they really wanted to get past him, he wouldn't be able to stop them. He could take a few of them with him if they rode him down, but he wasn't sure he wanted to draw and fire on them. Even though they were being used for a purpose he considered corrupt, the militiamen weren't outlaws or anything like that. He didn't want to have to kill any of them. Colonel Starkwell rode in front of the troop. He raised a hand in a signal to halt.
Company, halt!
What are you doing here, Marshal? I thought that when we left you back at Buckskin, I made it clear this was none of your affair.
I'm making it my affair. I took a shortcut and rode out to the Alhambra. You might as well turn around and go back. The mine's deserted. All the strikers are gone.
You mean you warned them and they fled? By God, I ought to put you under arrest. You should be clapped in irons and thrown in your own jail.
You can try it if you want.
Move aside. I'm not going to take your word for it that the strikers have abandoned the mine. We're going out there anyway.
Fine. Go right on ahead, Colonel.
Starkwell's eyes slitted in suspicion, as if he thought that Frank was playing some sort of trick on him. But he gigged his horse into motion and waved the rest of the soldiers ahead. Frank sat there beside the trail as the militia troop rode past him. He followed them back to the Alhambra, but reined in a couple of hundred yards away to watch as the men searched the bunkhouse, the stamp mill and office, and the mine shaft itself. He could tell from the way Starkwell was stomping around that the colonel was getting madder and madder. Frank turned Goldie and started back toward the settlement. He didn't want another confrontation with Starkwell right now. Starkwell might be angry enough at the fact that his quarry had eluded him to try making good on that threat to arrest Frank. Pushing Goldie into a run, Frank reached Buckskin well ahead of the militia. He went straight to the office of the Lucky Lizard Mining Company, hoping he would find Tip Woodford there. Tip was there, all right, and so was Diana.
What is it, Frank?
You know the militia was here earlier?
Yeah, we saw the soldier boys. Heard that Monroe got the governor to send them in. I wish he hadn't done that. It's liable to just make things worse. We would have worked things out sooner or later if everybody would just leave us alone.
I know. That's why I rode out to the Alhambra to warn Rogan and the other men that the militia was coming to break the strike. I sent them to the Lucky Lizard.
A Lucky Lizard? Why'd you want to do that?
Because all the men from both mines who are on strike are coming into town tonight for a meeting with you and Monroe. We're going to settle this without a war breaking out.
I'd be glad to settle things with the fellas who work for me if they'll just listen to reason.
I think they will once they realize they've been duped. The Fowler brothers are still working for Monroe and Hammersmith. They caused that cave-in to stir up trouble and get the strike started, so the Lucky Lizard to be shut down. The only problem was that Monroe didn't count on it spreading to his mine, too.
Do you have any proof of that, Frank?
Nothing that would stand up in a court of law, more than likely. But I can prove somebody sabotaged the timbers in the mine and caused the cave-in. I'm betting that if Mike and Gib Fowler think they're facing a hang rope because of what they did, they'll be more than happy to testify that they're following orders from either Hammersmith or Monroe.
Maybe. Monroe being behind it all would explain why he raised his wages and cut back the hours his men are working, too. Those things were just temporary to make the Lucky Lizard look worse.
That's my theory. As soon as he put you out of business, things at the Alhambra would go back to being the way they were, if not worse.
That fella's playing a mighty deep game.
Yeah, but he's gonna lose the final hand. Dave Rogan's the leader of the strike at the Alhambra. I told him about the tunnel that runs down here from the Lucky Lizard. All the men from both mines will be here after dark, coming through the tunnel, so the militia won't be able to stop them.
That fella Rogan's an ornery varmint. Are you sure we can trust him?
He's a hothead and a troublemaker, all right. But I think at the core he's an honest man.
Let's hope you're right.
And let's hope everything can be settled without bloodshed.
That's the idea.
But you don't hold out much hope that'll happen, do you?
Never hurts to hope for the best.
And prepare for all hell to break loose, he added silently to himself. The militia arrived back in town a short time later. Colonel Starkwell dismounted and stalked into the hotel, no doubt to report to Hamish Monroe about their lack of success at the Alhambra. From the boardwalk in front of the marshal's office, Frank watched Starkwell go into the building and thought that it was pretty clear who was really in charge of the militia. The governor must have made it plain to Starkwell that Monroe was really calling the shots in Buckskin. At least, Monroe thought he was. If Frank's plan worked, Monroe might find himself with a problem a lot worse than some striking miners.
I still ain't found Clint. Where do you reckon he got off to?
I don't know. I'd feel a little better if he was in town, though, in case trouble breaks out between the militia and those miners.
You gonna take a side in that fight if it happens?
No, but I'm gonna do my best to keep the townspeople safe. I'm hoping that Starkwell won't start a full-scale battle right here in the middle of town. That'll look mighty bad for the governor, no matter what caused it, and the colonel's bound to know that.
Frank had a shoulder leaned against one of the posts holding up the awning over the boardwalk. He straightened from that casual pose as he looked along the street and noticed a rider coming.
There's Clint now.
Sure enough is. Wonder where he's been.
Sorry for disappearing like that, Frank. The wanderlust got me. I had to get out of town and ride around the hills for a while.
You need to tell Jack or me where you're going before you do something like that again. For all we knew, you'd ridden off and weren't coming back.
No, I'd never desert you boys like that. Wasn't any trouble while I was gone, was there?
Just the damn militia riding in to bust the hell out of them strikes at the mines.
You don't say. What happened?
Frank filled him in on the day's events. Clint shook his head in seeming disbelief.
So all those miners are coming into town tonight for a showdown with Woodford and Monroe?
I wouldn't call it a showdown. They need to stop fighting and get down to some serious talking.
I can see the mayor going along with that, but not Monroe, or that fella Hammersmith who works for him.
They'll have more trouble of their own once I show everybody what I found inside the shaft at the Lucky Lizard.
Frank took the acid-damaged piece of timber from his pocket so that the two deputies could look at it.
Somebody's bound to have seen one or both of the Fowler brothers hanging around those support beams they gave out. Once they realize they've been found out, they won't take the blame for those deaths by themselves.
Sounds like you got it all figured out, all right.
Well, we have to wait and see. All three of us are going to be on hand for that meeting to keep things as peaceful as we can.
I'll go put my horse up. Again, I'm sorry for disappearing on you like that, Frank.
Well, you're here now. That's all that matters.
Clint looked back as he started to lead the animal toward the livery stable. Frank couldn't have said for sure, but he thought he saw something flicker through Clint's eyes just then. An unreadable expression that was still somehow troubling, as if Clint were wrestling with some sort of inner demon. But then the little gunman's face was as bland and smiling as ever, and Frank wasn't sure he had even seen anything unusual. He told himself not to worry about it. With the meeting looming between the striking miners and the mine owners, a meeting that might well turn into a violent showdown despite his best efforts, Frank figured he had bigger problems on his plate right now than whatever was bothering Clint Farnham. Hap Mitchell walked up to the top of the ridge where Poole was studying Buckskin through a pair of field glasses.
Any sign of the signal?
If there was, don't you think I'd have said something before now?
I didn't mean any fence, Jory. I just figured from the way you were talking earlier that we'd ride right into the settlement and start looting the place.
Never hurts to be sure everything's lined up just right. That's why we're going to wait for Farnham's signal before we move in.
Sure, that makes sense. You know best, Jory.
You're damn right I do.
Despite what he had just said, Hap Mitchell wasn't so sure about that anymore. There came a time when bad luck caught up to every gang, no matter how careful they were. It had happened to Frank and Jesse James and their cousins, the Youngers, up in Northfield, Minnesota. And just a couple of years earlier, the Dalton boys had run into the same thing in Coffeyville, Kansas. Mitchell had to ask himself if Buckskin, Nevada might turn out to be the pool gang's Northfield or Coffeyville. If that was the case, he didn't want to be there for it. He ought to get Lonnie Beeman and slip away from here while there was still time. Hap and Lonnie had been riding together for a lot of years. Maybe they should get while the getting was good. But if they did that and then the raid went off perfectly, just as planned, and then not only would they miss out on their shares of the loot, but they would have earned the enmity of Jory Poole for deserting him. Jory wouldn't take kindly to that fact. In fact, he might just track them down and kill them for their disloyalty. No, Mitchell thought. It looked like he and Lonnie were stuck. They would have to join in the raid with the rest of the gang, as soon as Clint Farnham gave the signal. Frank was waiting in the back room of the building that housed the Lucky Lizard's office when dusk settled down over Buckskin. He had already lifted the trapdoor and exposed the ladder that led down to the tunnel from the mine. That tunnel ran for a mile or more into the nearby hills. Frank didn't know when the miners would be arriving or even if they would come. Dave Rogan could have changed his mind and backed out of the deal. There was no guarantee either that the men from the Lucky Lizard would come along, even if Rogan and the other miners from the Alhambra did as Frank had suggested. A faint noise caught Frank's attention and pulled him out of his reverie. He leaned closer to the open trapdoor and listened. The echoing sounds of footsteps and voices came to his ears. Men were moving along the tunnel toward him. A tight smile appeared on Frank's lips. The miners were on their way. Frank stepped into the front room, where Tip Woodford, Diana, Catamount Jack, and Garrett Claiborne waited. Even though Claiborne, as the superintendent of the Crown Royal, had no direct stake in what happened tonight, he was here because of his belief that Monroe had been behind the explosion that had almost cost him his life, and because he and Diana had grown closer as well. Claiborne's broken arm was still in a sling, but he was getting around well enough these days that he had been supervising the rebuilding of the mine stamp mill.
They're on their way. I can hear them coming down the tunnel.
I sure hope we can settle this mess. It'll get everything out in the open anyway.
Jack, stay here and keep Brogan and the others here for the time being. There's no place in town big enough to hold everybody on both sides, so the meeting will have to take place in the street. I'll go tell Monroe what's about to happen.
What if he refuses to negotiate?
Then I'll settle things with the fellows who work for me, and Monroe's problems will be his own lookout. You know Monroe's liable to tell that militia colonel to arrest Rogan and the rest of the bunch from the Alhambra.
He can't do that, because they're already going to be in my custody. And as the duly appointed Marshal of Buckskin, here in town, I have the authority to make that stick.
You and a couple of deputies against a whole troop of militia?
I've been going around the town this afternoon talking to folks. Amos Hillman said he'd back my play, and so did Professor Burton. Leo Benjamin and Johnny Collier and Claude Langley want in on it, too. Ed Kelly said he'd come to the meeting and would spread the word. So did the others. The citizens of Buckskin are ready to say that enough is enough and put a stop to all this squabbling.
I hope you're right, Frank. But I sure wish Hamish Monroe had never come to town.
You and me both, Tip. You and me both.
Frank left the office and crossed the street at an angle, heading for the old hotel. Monroe had guards posted on the porch, as usual, and they moved to block Frank's path as he started toward the door.
You're not welcome here, Marshal. Miss Monroe's orders.
I'm here on official business, so step aside.
Well, I reckon if it's official business, you'll find Mr. Monroe in the dining room.
Frank went inside, into the lobby, and through the arched entrance that led into the dining room. He found Hamish and Jessica Monroe there, along with Gunther Hammersmith, Nathan Evers, and Colonel Starkwell. The men were gathered around a table talking, while Jessica sat alone at another table.
What are you doing here, Morgan? I gave orders that I didn't want to be bothered by you.
You'd better be bothered, Monroe. Those men of yours who are on strike have come to town to negotiate a settlement.
What? Those fugitives are here?
They're not fugitives. They haven't been charged with any crime. But I placed them in protective custody, just as a precaution.
You can't do that! I'm going to get my troops and place those men under arrest.
I don't think so.
Frank played his trump card. He had made the long, hard ride to Virginia City and back during the afternoon, pushing Stormy as hard as he dared, and the Big Appaloosa hadn't let him down. Frank took a telegram from his pocket and handed it to Starkwell, who hesitated before taking it, as if Frank were trying to give him a rattlesnake.
As you can see, the governor has rescinded his previous orders to you. You're to assist me in maintaining order in Buckskin at my request. I haven't asked for your help, Colonel.
How?
What sort of trick is this, Morgan? How do we know that wire isn't a fake? How do we know that it's really from the governor?
I guess you'll have to go to Virginia City and wire him yourself.
It's real, all right. I know how the governor sounds when he gives orders like this. How did you do it, Morgan? How the hell did you manage to go over my head like that?
I've got a friend or two in high places, too.
From the sound of this, my men and I are under your command.
This is outrageous! Outrageous!
Call it whatever you want. What it comes down to is that striking miners from the Lucky Lizard and the Alhambra have come to Buckskin. Tip Woodford has agreed to meet with them, Monroe. Whether you do or not is up to you, but I have a feeling that the strike at the Lucky Lizard is going to be settled tonight. Unless you want the Alhambra to fall behind, it might be a good idea for you to reach a settlement, too.
Go to hell! No one tells me what to do!
Your choice.
Frank took the acid-damaged piece of wood from his pocket, tossing it up and down on his palm so that Monroe could see it and recognize it. Frank walked out, leaving Monroe seething behind him. Starkwell hurried after him.
My men are camped just outside of town. I'm going to bring them in. I don't trust those miners. If there's any trouble, I intend to suppress it with all due force. No matter what you say, Morgan.
Fetch your men if you want, Colonel. But there won't be any riot. I'll see to that.
Diana and Claiborne stood on the boardwalk in front of the Lucky Lizard office. Frank made a motion toward them, and Diana turned and spoke through the open door of the office.
Frank's ready.
They moved aside, and a moment later, Catamount Jack strode out, followed by Dave Rogan. The striking miners filed out of the building and began to form ranks in the street. Catamount Jack hurried to one end of the street and set fire to a pile of branches and brush that had been stacked there earlier. Along with another bonfire at the far end of the street, the blaze would provide light for the meeting. After a moment, Frank realized that Clint Farnham wasn't lighting the other bonfire as he was supposed to.
Where's Clint?
Don't know. Has the little varmint up and disappeared again?
That appeared to be the case. Jack trotted down to the far end of the street and lit that pile, too. As the glow from the fires brightened, men carrying rifles and shotguns stepped out onto the boardwalk in various places, and Frank felt a surge of pride as he realized that his unofficial deputies were prepared to do their part if necessary. He nodded his thanks to Amos Hillman, Leo Benjamin, Ed Kelly, Professor Burton, and the others. They were all willing to fight for their town if they had to, and that meant Buckskin had become more than just a collection of buildings and people. It was truly a community now. With Colonel Starkwell at their head, the militiamen marched in from the other end of the settlement and faced the striking miners with about 20 yards separating the two groups. They carried their rifles slanted across their chests. The miners were all armed, too. Tension was thick in the air. All it would take was one reckless act to set off a hellstorm of gunfire. Frank didn't intend to let that happen. He walked into the center of the street between the two groups. Tip Woodford strode out from the other boardwalk.
All right. We're here to lay all our cards on the table and settle this thing.
Wait just a damned minute!
Hamish Monroe marched out into the street, followed by Hammersmith.
I still think the militia should arrest all these men for their illegal strike. But I can see now you're determined to have mob rule instead of law and order, Morgan. I want the strike against the Alhambra settled as much as you do, though. So, effective right now, every man who goes back to work for me will have his wages raised 50 cents an hour, and no one will work more than 8 hours a day.
50 cents an hour? For God's sake, I can't match that. Nobody can. Nobody's gonna want to work for me now.
Well, that's your problem, Woodford. Well, men, what do you say?
Frank held up a hand to stop them before they could shout their agreement.
We know why you're doing this, Monroe, and you're not gonna get away with it.
Frank had spotted the men he was looking for in the crowd of miners, and now he moved toward them. The miners drew aside to make a path for him until Frank was confronting the Fowler brothers, Red Mike and Gibb.
You two are under arrest for murder.
The sound of galloping hoofbeats were loud in the gathering shadows. The men who waited on horseback leaned forward in their saddles. They could tell that only one man was approaching, and since there were about 36 of them, they weren't worried.
Hold it right there!
Jory! Thank God I found you! We've got to call it off.
The state militia's in town, along with a bunch of well-armed miners who are on strike. Even a lot of the townspeople have got guns and are ready for trouble tonight.
Call it off. I don't call off a raid once the time's come. We're going in there. We're going to loot that town from one end to the other and then burn it to the ground, just like we've done a dozen other towns.
I tell you, you can't. The militia.
To hell with the militia and everybody else in Buckskin. They won't know what's hitting them because they'll be too busy fighting each other. This is even better than I hoped. From what you're telling me, that town's like a giant keg of gunpowder tonight. All it needs is one spark to set it off. Are you going to go give us that spark, Farnum? Or do I pull this trigger and blow your head off?
I'll do it, Jory. Just give me a couple minutes to get back down there. You'll know it when the ball starts.
You double-cross me and you'll live to regret it. You just won't live long. Long enough to wish you were dead, though.
Clint wheeled his horse around and rode off, vanishing in the darkness as he headed for town.
Murder? Gibb and me didn't murder nobody. This is ridiculous. Colonel, I demand that you put a stop to this. Arrest the marshal so that we can settle the strike.
Mr. Monroe, I don't believe I have the authority to do that anymore. Besides, I sort of want to hear what Morgan has to say.
Frank drew the piece of timber from his pocket and held it up where everybody could see it.
This came from the cave-in at the Lucky Lizard. If you take a close look at it, you can see that it's been damaged. Practically burned through by sulfuric acid, in fact. Somebody doped those timbers with acid so that the wood was eaten away and the timbers gave out. That's what caused the cave-in.
You can't blame that on us. Gibb and me didn't have nothing to do with that.
You had more reason to do it than anybody else. You'd just come over to Lucky Lizard from the Alhambra.
We got fired over there!
That makes a good story, especially when you're still working for Monroe.
I don't know anything about this!
You're grasping at straws, Morgan. You're just trying to stir up hard feelings toward me.
I'm just trying to get to the truth. Did any of you men see either of the Fowler brothers messing with those timbers before the ceiling collapsed?
Red, Mike, and Gibb were both hanging around that area not long before the cave-in. I didn't see them put anything on the timbers, but that don't mean they didn't. They sure enough could have.
That ain't proof of anything.
Then maybe we should search your gear at the mine. You might still have some of that acid you used stashed away.
It was all Hammersmith's idea! He made us do it!
Looks like you'll hang too, Hammersmith.
The hell I will! It was all Monroe's doing! He's the one who wanted the strike of the Lucky Lizard!
Shut up! Lies! All lies!
Just like he told me to have the stamp mill at the Crown Royal blown up!
It's a riot, Starkwell! They're going to kill me! You've got to stop them! The governor wouldn't want you to protect me! Order your men to fire, damn you! Fire!
Suddenly, a shot rang out. Frank wasn't sure where it came from, but he saw Dave Rogan stagger back a step as the bullet smashed into his body. Rogan clutched his chest, and blood welled between his fingers. He fell heavily in the street.
One of the soldiers shot Dave! Get him!
The militiamen jerked their rifles up. The miners surged forward. And Hammersmith leaped at Frank, swinging a big fist at the marshal's head. Curls of smoke still drifted from the muzzle of Clint Farnham's gun as he ducked back into the alley mouth. Lining up the shot through the crowd in the street had been tricky, but he had done it. More shots rang out as tight-strung nerves snapped and the two groups opened fire on each other. Frank ducked under Hammersmith's roundhouse blow as guns began to roar. As Hammersmith stumbled forward, thrown off balance by the missed punch, Frank stepped closer. He had managed to hang on to his gun, even though Hammersmith had knocked the barrel aside. Now he slapped the Colt against Hammersmith's head, putting enough power behind the blow to knock the mine superintendent to his knees, stunned.
Hold your fire! Stop shooting!
Cease fire! Cease fire!
It was too late. Already, the street was turning into chaos as the two sides splintered and broke up to do battle in small groups, sometimes firing at each other as they darted for cover, other times grappling hand to hand. Frank grabbed Tip Woodford's arm and shoved the mayor toward the office of the Lucky Lizard. As they reached the boardwalk, a fresh volley of shots broke out, but these came from the edge of town. Frank twisted his head and saw a totally unexpected sight. Dozens of hard-faced, roughly dressed men on horseback were galloping into town, blazing away with the six guns in their hands as they thundered down the main street.
Ah! How bad are you hit?
Just tree sprung. Who the hell are those fellas?
I don't know. Get inside and look after Claiborne and Diana.
Frank gave Tip a shove that sent the burly older man stumbling through the open door of the office, then whirled back to the street, where a three-way battle was now going on. Four-way, if you counted the citizens of Buckskin, who had been posted along the street with rifles and shotguns. They had sought cover behind water troughs, rain barrels, and parked wagons in order to swap lead with the murderous newcomers. The men on horseback had scattered the battling militiamen and miners, riding down some of them and shooting others. As Frank darted along the boardwalk with bullets knocking up splinters from the planks around his feet, he got a look at the big, blonde-bearded man who seemed to be the leader of the strangers. He hadn't seen Jory Poole in several years, but the big outlaw hadn't changed that much. Frank squeezed off a couple of shots and saw one of the outlaws tumble out of the saddle. Some of the other members of the gang were down, too. Hamish Monroe was shaking with fear as he scrambled up the stairs in the hotel. Monroe opened the door and stepped into the suite. He didn't see anyone.
Jessica! Jessica, where are you?
Jessica lunged at Hammersmith as he came stumbling in the door of the hotel, blood running down his face from the cut that Frank Morgan's gun had opened up on his head.
Gunther! Gunther, what's going on out there?
All hell's breaking loose. Somebody started shooting, and some other bastards came riding in and gunning people down.
Gunther, listen to me. It's time.
Time? Time for what?
Time to kill Hamish, so that the two of us can be together from now on, truly together as we were meant to be. I'll be all yours, Gunther, and we'll have Hamish's money. We can go anywhere we want and always be together, just you and me.
Kill Monroe?
That's right. He just went upstairs. We can do it, Gunther. We can have everything we ever wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. What the hell?
Get in there, Gunther. We have to find out what happened.
Hammersmith went in first, but Jessica was close enough behind him to peer around him and see Nathan Evers whirling around from where Monroe's body lay on the floor. He had to be dead. And the smoke curling from the barrel of the gun in Evers' hand made it clear who had killed him. Evers lifted the gun toward Hammersmith.
Stay back!
Nathan! You've killed Hamish!
That's right. And I'll kill you too if you get in my way, you bitch! Always parading yourself around. Monroe never saw you for the slut you really are. He was a fool, a blind fool, but not for that reason alone. He never had any idea that I've been bleeding his fortune away from him for years.
You stole from him?
Thousands and thousands of dollars, and he never knew. Now he never will. He's dead, and you and Hammersmith soon will be too. All I have to do is say that some of those crazy gunmen broke in here and shot the three of you, and no one will ever suspect otherwise. This is the perfect opportunity for me. I can finally stop groveling.
You're the one who's crazy. Put that gun down.
No, you first, and then the slut.
Hammersmith threw himself toward Evers. The gun in the treacherous secretary's hand blasted again and again as Evers jerked the trigger. Hammersmith stumbled a little as the bullets thudded into him, but they didn't really slow him down. Hammersmith crashed into Evers and drove him over backward. Hammersmith's sausage-like fingers closed around Evers' neck and twisted hard as both men fell. The two men hit the floor. Hammersmith had broken Evers' neck. Frank knew he couldn't stop all the outlaws who were charging his position as he ducked behind a water trough, but he gripped the Colt tightly and steeled himself to take as many of them with him as he could. At that moment, a shotgun boomed and several shots blasted from a handgun. And as Frank raised himself into firing position, he saw that a couple of the outlaws' horses were now riderless. As a bullet ripped past his head, Frank triggered the peacemaker and sent slugs pounding into the other two desperados. They somersaulted backward off their mounts. Tip Woodford and Garrett Claiborne ran toward Frank, reloading as they came. Tip had the scatter gun, while Claiborne clutched a Colt revolver in his good hand.
We gotta get folks organized! Who the hell are those raiders?
An outlaw gang led by a man named Jory Poole. Poole's the big hombre with the blonde beard. Come on, we'll form up at the Silver Baron.
As they ran through chaos and flying lead toward the saloon, Frank spotted Leo Benjamin, Professor Burton, and Ed Kelly, all of whom were armed and trying to mount a defense against the invaders.
Hey! You men, this way!
Frank waved for them to follow him and Tip and Claiborne. As they neared the Silver Baron, the group of defenders picked up three more members in Amos Hillman, Claude Langley, and Langley's helper, Roy. Frank saw Starkwell.
Colonel, we're forming up at the saloon!
Starkwell nodded as he squeezed off a shot from his revolver and sent another outlaw tumbling out of the saddle.
Quick, men! This way!
You miners, this way! The saloon!
Fighting their way along the street, the group of defenders numbered about 20 strong by the time they reached the Silver Baron. Miners and militiamen were fighting side by side now instead of battling against each other. Johnny Collier pushed through the bat wings to join them, the sawed-off greener he kept under the bar now clutched in his hands. About a dozen of the outlaws were down, which made the odds roughly even now. The deadly accurate fire of the defenders had drawn Jory Poole's attention.
Kill them! Kill them all!
The gang surged forward like a tidal wave of death. As bullets flew, men on both sides dropped. The huge mounted figure of Jory Poole suddenly loomed up right in front of Frank. Frank had to dive to the side as Poole leaped his horse onto the boardwalk. Poole yanked the animal around in a tight turn and began firing at Frank, who rolled across the planks as the boss outlaw's bullets chewed splinters from them. Then someone leaped past him, gun blazing.
No! Damn it! No!
The little gunfighter went right at Poole, firing wildly. But he had taken only a couple of steps before a pair of slugs crashed into his chest and picked him up, driving him backward. As Clint fell, Poole tried to swing his gun toward Frank again, but he was too late. Frank pressed the Colt's trigger. Poole's head practically exploded as the bullet smashed through his skull. The outlaw leader toppled out of the saddle, falling to the boardwalk. Poole's death took the fight out of the remaining outlaws. Some of them whirled their mounts and retreated, trying to get away before they could be cut down. A few made it. The others threw down their guns and thrust their hands in the air. Seeing that the back of the attack was broken, Frank surged to his feet.
Hold your fire! Hold your fire! Jack, start rounding up the prisoners and take them down to the jail.
Them cells are gonna be crammed plumb full.
Colonel, will you give my deputy a hand?
Of course, Marshal. I think we could use a truce right about now.
Frank nodded in agreement. The last thing he wanted after fighting off this outlaw raid was a resumption of the hostilities that had been going on before Poole and his gang rode in. Frank turned toward Clint Farnham and knelt at the little gunfighter's side. The front of Clint's shirt was soaked with blood, and more crimson leaked from his mouth, but he was still alive. His eyelids flickered open as Frank put a hand on his shoulder.
Frank, you're all right?
Yeah, thanks to you. You saved my life, Clint. Poole would have ventilated me in another second.
That's good. I'm sorry.
You were a good deputy, Clint.
Gently, Frank closed the man's eyes and then stood up. Dr. Garland had arrived on the scene and was checking over the wounded defenders. Frank walked along the boardwalk, noting that Roy was dead, along with a couple of the miners and one of the militiamen. A number of others had wounds of varying seriousness, but Garland seemed to think that all of them would pull through.
Considering how badly the town was shot up, we're lucky more people weren't killed.
If there's anything I can do to help, Doc, just let me know.
We still got the same mess as before. What are we going to do about those striking miners?
Now that the parts Monroe and Hammersmith played and everything will come out, maybe we can talk some sense into them. We'll have to have another meeting.
Well, where are Hammersmith and Monroe? I don't see them in the street or anywhere along the boardwalk.
They must have made it back to the hotel when all hell broke loose. I'll go find them.
Better let us come with you. Since they know they're facing a lot of legal trouble now, they're liable to put up a fight. That bruiser Hammersmith, anyway. I ain't sure Monroe knows how to fight with anything, except money.
You fellas have already fought your battle today. This is a job for Buckskins Marshal, and that's who I am. At least for now.
Frank? What do you mean by that, Frank? Dadgummit!
Frank didn't pay any attention. He kept walking until he reached the boardwalk in front of the hotel. As he stepped into the lobby, he stopped short at the sight of Jessica Monroe sitting on the stairs leading up to the second floor. Her face was red and streaked with tears, but she was still beautiful despite that.
Marshall, it's terrible. They're dead. They're all dead.
She hurried across the lobby to Frank and threw her arms around him. The next morning, Frank met with Tip, Diana, and Starkwell in the Lucky Lizard's office.
She claims that Hammersmith shot Monroe, then Evers shot Hammersmith, and Hammersmith broke Evers' neck before he died.
You reckon she's telling the truth?
I can't prove that she's not. My gut says she's lying, at least about part of it. But that doesn't change anything. Monroe is dead, so that makes her the owner of the Alhambra. She wants you to settle the strike with all the miners, Tip. And she says she'll go along with whatever agreement you negotiate with them.
What's she gonna do? She's not staying here in Buckskin, is she?
No, Mrs. Monroe told me she's going back to San Francisco as soon as she can. She's not interested in having anything to do with running the mine. She's gonna hire a new superintendent and leave everything to him.
All she'll do is collect the money.
Yeah, I reckon she'll do that, all right.
I don't like the way Monroe tried to use me and my men, Marshal. But I feel a responsibility to remain here and help maintain order until everything is settled.
And I appreciate that, Colonel. All the miners are getting together over at the Silver Baron. Mayor Woodford and I'll go talk to them. It might be best to keep your men outside for now, where they'll be handy, but the miners won't feel threatened by them.
But if you need our help, you don't hesitate to ask for it.
I won't.
The meeting didn't last long. Fighting a common enemy had rebuilt some of the bonds that had existed between Tip and the men who worked for him, and with Hamish Monroe and Gunther Hammersmith both dead, along with Dave Rogan, the miners from the Alhambra had lost some of their anger. Tip's workers knew that the Fowler brothers had been responsible for the cave-in and for stirring up the strike, and since Red Mike and Gibb were dead as well, the miners were willing to get back to work with only a few concessions from Tip. The men from the Alhambra were willing to accept the same proposal, and Frank promised on behalf of the Crown Royal's management to go along too, so that the wages and hours and safety conditions would be roughly consistent at all three of the major mines.
You reckon young Claiborne will go along with that?
I think I can pretty well guarantee it.
Yeah, I forgot you own part of the Crown Royal.
But my real job is here in Buckskin. I'm just not sure I ought to be wearing this badge anymore.
You got to stop talking like that. Nobody wants you to turn in your badge. Hell, if you hadn't rallied everybody together when them outlaws come charging in, they'd have looted the town and likely burned it to the ground. You said that's what Poole usually did.
Yeah, but I didn't stop Monroe and Hammersmith from causing a lot of trouble before that happened. We had a full-scale riot going on, if you remember.
I remember, all right. And I remember you risking your neck and doing everything in your power to head things off before they got that far. It ain't your fault you couldn't.
I'll think about it.
As they reached the saloon, a man who had just ridden up in front of the Silver Baron stopped them.
Morgan. Frank Morgan.
I'm Morgan.
I got a bone to pick with you, Morgan. Folks say you're mighty fast with a gun, but I think I'm faster. I aim to prove it.
And you're a damn fool, mister. You know who this is?
Yeah, he's Frank Morgan, but he don't scare me. I can beat him to the draw.
No, he's the Marshal of Buckskin, and he's our friend. Even if you do beat him, which I seriously doubt you can, you'll have to shoot me next, and then him.
Tip nodded toward the bat wings where John Collier had appeared carrying his sawed-off shotgun.
And him?
That was Leo Benjamin, stepping out onto the porch of the general store with a rifle in his hands.
And him?
Catamount Jack eased along the boardwalk, his gnarled old hand on the butt of the cap and ball pistol at his hip. Tip pointed out half a dozen other townspeople whose attention had been attracted by the confrontation between Frank and the would-be fast gun. The stranger looked around, his face growing taut with worry as he realized he was surrounded by hostility.
So you see, mister, when you go up against a marshal of Buckskin, one way or another, you're gonna wind up blowed full of holes. Don't you reckon the smartest thing to do be to climb back on that horse and ride out of here while you got the chance?
You are the luckiest hombre I ever saw, Morgan.
The stranger grabbed his reins, swung up into the saddle, and rode out. Frank watched him go.
Yep, I reckon I sure am.
The Last Gunfighter Helltown is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2007, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, James Konacek, Richard Rowan, Michael Glenn, Jonathan Watkins, Laura Quinn Anderson, Tim Carlin, David Coyne, Terrence Aselford, Mort Shelby, Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, Tony Nam, Jeff Baker, Casey Platt, Tim Getman, Tom Simpson, Eric Messner, Johan Detweiler, Stephen Carpenter, Sonny Lasky, and Nanette Savard. Directed by Ken Jackson. Book adapted for Graphic Audio by Doug Krenzlin. Dialogue editing and Graphic Audio sound design by Temeskin Wubna. Original music and title theme by Johan Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed The Last Gunfighter, be sure to look for the series Sidewinders, as well as Smoke Jensen the Mountain Man and The First Mountain Man. Available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. Keep listening for previews of other thrillers in Graphic Audio.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
What is your name?
Anya Creed.
I see.
Who are you?
My name is Agamemnon. We have your passport here.
They took it from me when I was kidnapped.
We will videotape your beheading and then broadcast it all over the world.
Beheading?
Are you afraid to die?
I faced death before.
I will kill you!
Don't move. Who are you?
My name is Anya Creed. The Abu Sayyaf kidnapped me several days ago. I have no idea where I am.
You live here, or are you just passing through?
Gunnery Sergeant Vic Gutierrez, United States Marine Corps.
Something bothering you, Vic?
I got this feeling like someone's keeping an eye on us.
Excuse me!
What happened?
Anya, wake up and pay attention.
Where are we?
You are in a cavern located far beneath the surface of the jungle. You're wasting your time. You would need to be a lot stronger than you are in order to break free. Besides, you are to be sacrificed to our god.
I don't believe you.
Very well. You believe now, don't you?
Oh, great.
Oh, crap. Rogue Angel 18. Sacrifice. In Graphic Audio.
Smoke Jensen is an honest man trying to make an honest living.
I hear you're selling your stock, Smoke.
Most of it. Gonna raise horses, Monty.
Oh, I'll keep a small herd, but nothing like we've had out at the Sugarloaf.
You using the rails?
I wish, Monty. No. This'll be a hard drive, all the way up to Montana, into a big valley. Town's called Blacktown. Fellow up there by the name of T.J. Dugan wants the whole damn herd.
But what Smoke Jensen doesn't realize is he'll be leading his herd right into the territory of the most notorious cattle baron in all of the land, Clint Black.
Well, the boys would be awfully disappointed. Do you really think this Mr. Black would harm a boy?
From what I've heard about him, I think he's probably capable of doing just about anything.
When Clint Black hears that Smoke Jensen is coming to town, he gets the idea to set an ambush and murder Jensen and his entire crew.
This is all that survived?
Yeah. We lost 13 all told.
The boys?
Willie, Jake, and Rabbit. They dragged Rabbit. Davey took a slug through the head. Johnson made a fight of it. Nate and Little Ben fought them to the end.
I found Jake's body. They shot him in the belly. He died hard.
But Clint Black will make one dire mistake. He'll leave Smoke Jensen alive and hungry for revenge. Don't miss all the blood-soaked action in Smoke Jensen number 10, Courage of the Mountain Man. In this one, everybody dies.
I'm hoping my brother will pull his horns and get straightened out.
Too late.
Why?
Because I'm gonna kill him, that's why.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series, available only at www.graphicaudio.net.